So let's start with the afternoon session. We will be talking about innovation, the cultural perception changes in rural areas when it comes to innovation. And Raimo Strastin will be starting off the discussion. Thank you, Kaul. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. And thank you for the organizers for inviting me. It seems that the schedule is a little bit changed at last moment here, because before I thought that I would be ahead in the schedule a little while. And because of that, I also thought that I would have to talk about the definition of innovation to get the discussion going. And I think we also heard from the audience, from Jaak, as well as from others, that it's always useful to agree on things, and it's always useful to know what we're talking about in terms of terminology. And this common thread in the terminology, or this common understanding of a terminology, is an area where we're lacking. And it's also visible in the World Development Committee's board discussions. Last time we had a discussion, our minister also smiled a little doubtfully and admitted that definitions are different. We understand things a little differently. So let's get started. I thought I would give a few examples from different authorities, great thinkers in the world, what they have thought about this topic. And then I would like to give a few examples. And if we look at definitions, then the first place we look nowadays is Wikipedia. And it is a semi-scientific context in the virtual world. And it also provided a very simple definition. Wikipedia says that innovation is doing something in a new way. And I like the fact that they also bring in the idea that it incorporates different fields of activities and different means in which innovation can be expressed. This definition talks about thinking, producing processes and organizations. And it also mentions a difference between inventions and innovations, which we already have talked about as well. We talked about how they differ, how they're connected. Then the next one, the next definition. I also found the late Steve Jobs' definition. And the first line, it says that innovation is something completely ordinary that people do every day. People my age still like to say that the Soviet man was very innovative and very resourceful when it came to everything, even everyday repairs. And that nowadays these skills are beginning to disappear because we just take our car into the shop to get repaired. For everything, we have a specialist coming in to fix it. However, in Soviet times, people were more innovative because they had to deal with these things themselves. However, we still have to be innovative to find who's going to fix our things nowadays, I believe. And as Steve Jobs says, innovation begins with ideas. If ideas get bounced around, discussed, looked at from different angles, then eventually they actually come to real results as well. And this quote also ends with a famous saying, not anyone can be an inventor, however, an innovator is something that we can be every day. Some more thoughts. Innovation is most definitely a tool in entrepreneurship. It is something that a businessman has to use, has to think about. Otherwise, they are just not competitive. This means taking risks, being brave, and having the courage to do things differently, not just going along with the mainstream. And if we didn't have any dissidence, we wouldn't have any progress or movement. I also added the last point about the athletes. Because throughout different times, there have been very exciting innovations in the field of sports as well. Because while we had spokes for bicycles most of the time, then at some point the bicycles didn't have spokes anymore in bike racing. And for example, swimming suits, you see full body costumes now, which seemed very strange in the beginning, but that we can see now that they produce better results. And here we have the fourth definition. I included the development of the competitivity of businesses and business transactions. And when we try to think about how in our daily lives we should try to find new ideas, new approaches, then I believe we are innovative in our own way every day. For me personally, first and foremost in our country, innovation has to deal with a change in mentality. Especially when I look at the rural areas, the different collaboration projects, whether they're village movements or whether they are leaders in different villages, there are very exciting and interesting things coming from the countryside. And I can see that people in their small communities are really thinking about how to do things better, how to improve their living environments. Before, Madis, during lunch, gave a good example about those people. Who nowadays are young and successful, and they go back to the countryside. They take over the farms of their forefathers. Because they think about why take off time during your holidays to go to a vacation resort farm, if you can live on a farm on a daily basis all the year long. So there are quite a number of those who are moving back to the countryside from the cities. And in current agriculture, we can see tractors that are as comfortable as luxury cars. They have, for example, stereo systems and high-tech equipment that hasn't been incorporated. And so they're wonderful tools to use. They have fully integrated systems. For example, in fisheries, for example, water doesn't have to be changed anymore. It's just purified. And fisheries don't have to be near major bodies of water anymore. What else can we see in terms of innovation? in villages, in rural settlements, what I would like to call monetary innovation is actually bike paths that a lot of people are actually using now. And it's great to see when you drive around the Estonian countryside. There are a lot of new bike paths. What else we're seeing in the countryside? It's high-speed internet connections, which could be termed as innovation in the rural area. And since my task is also to irritate you a little bit, then with my last few slides, I would like to focus on topics that have been handled in the MAC board. While the Ministry of Agriculture, with its partner, is doing its best to keep rural areas vital, to make sure that people there have a good life, that they have jobs, that they have income. And it seems that other ministries are doing something completely different. Sometimes it seems that they are working on really killing rural life. Because what's going to happen when schools are, for example, closed? Young people move away from these areas. If you don't have a kindergarten where you can put your child, then what are you going to do? And as an innovative way of thinking, we can bring as an example the Pikakannu school. This is where we can see the protest on the part of the people who are not willing to settle for a school being closed down. They're people who are fighting for their own existence, and they have achieved quite a bit. And the same thing happened in the south of Estonia, in Otepää, where people fought the closing of a school. There have been a lot of shops and post offices that have been shut down in rural areas. However, these are actually the social centers or the social locations for people who live in the countryside. It's a place where people meet and where they exchange experiences. But it's good to see that some of these centers are being revitalized and they're being made into multifunctional centers, where you have libraries, where you have different kinds of services, so that people can actually go there to get things done and to meet as well, to have a social setting. So this is a two-way type of innovation, because shops are clearly business enterprises. They have their business interests as a point of departure. The third point I have here is these idiomatic solutions by the state. They're different. The state functions the Tax and Custom Board, the ARIB, and the ERs, for example, that are all centralized in one location. This seems to be an innovative solution to get all these things in one place, all these services. However, then we have to ask, what does a person get from this center? What is it good for? I'm not sure that everyone in the rural areas appreciates these functions. And the last point here, I found this in the concept for this event today. And I think this is a phrase that individually speaks a little bit about how people in rural areas feel that they people are being they are being lectured, like others are telling them how to live. I wouldn't dare actually go as far as to bring parallels to the past, to the collective system. However, we should encourage people to trust their communities and to collaborate when it comes to their future. And the state should also support that. I would like to end on a positive note with positive examples. As it has been mentioned already at least once, as a state, we probably are rather innovative if you look at the big picture. We do have quite a few good things that are happening here and that will continue to happen. Last week in Germany with our partners, and I really had to get online to check my email because I had people I had to contact. And all of a sudden, I realized that in this big city I was in Germany, I could not find an internet connection, a public internet connection. There were no cafes, no open wireless locations anywhere. And I asked our partners who were actually working at a university, I asked them how I could get online. And they said it's not possible because we do have wireless. However, it's so secret and so secure that guests actually cannot get online. So I ended up in the middle of Germany with actually no connection to the outside world. And it was actually interesting to find out how life can function like that too nowadays. Another good example is Let's Do It, a civic initiative, one of the best things I think that has been done in Estonia over the recent years. This is a campaign gathering people to clean up the countryside. And as another innovative thought is something that has been mentioned in the media, and the locals probably know it, but guests perhaps not. However, there is this lovely little farm somewhere in rather the periphery of Estonia, in the very south, where there is a farmer who has a dairy farm. And in the media, they talked about how they have big problems with the fact that they just don't have any personnel. They don't have, everybody's leaving the countryside. They don't have anybody to do the work. And what they did was they worked together with a local municipality. They got on the media. They said, friends, if you want, come live here. Come, we have jobs for you. Come participate in this life, come benefit from it. And I think it's a great example of how local people have actually done something without any specific guidance, without any support. People just took matters in their own hand. They were clever and they figured out if they want to achieve something, then it can be done. And it seems that their undertaking is also successful. So this is where I would like to finish. Thank you.
Raymond.
Thank you, Raymond. I need to translate Raymond to our foreign visitors so that they understand his presentation better. Estonia is unique in the sense that the density of population is very low. If we take the average of Estonia, then it's around 30 people per square kilometer. And if we only look at rural areas, then the average density is 11 people per square kilometer. So I'm sure the Maltese are thinking, what kind of country is this? So in this context, based on cost efficiency, the government started closing down schools, postal offices, rescue units, and took all the services to county hubs. But Raimond is saying that locals can do something with local initiative, and the example of the school ended with the local people establishing a private school. So the state school was eliminated, but this private school was established and is still working, and they have like around 20 kids that they teach. So this area is in the very south of Estonia by the Latvian border. And then the campaign Let's Do It, it was civic action, and tens of thousands of Estonians came together to clean up the garbage that they found in nature. And now this campaign has spread to over 50 countries. And the Estonian example was even discussed in Rio during the Sustainable Development Conference as an example of civic initiative. And the second thing I would want to comment on, and unfortunately Raimond can stay with us for just 15 more minutes. We, of course, can continue the discussions, but let's agree that if you have questions for the presenter, then let's have these questions first, and then we can take longer comments and opinions that don't require a response from Raimond later. But Kaja already had her hand up, and hopefully we can get a microphone to her. Thank you. So I'll start with a question. You, as a representative of the Agricultural Association, did not mention how innovation should be approached in your field of work. Do you have interesting examples or future visions for horticulture? Thank you, Gaia. You are right. I didn't really touch upon horticulture much because of the format of this event. It's difficult to really focus on anything with 8 slides. One innovative example was already given, this Grünefe company that uses biological pesticides and has also invested into solar power for their greenhouses. So Grünefe company is really a remarkable innovative company in horticulture, but I must add that innovation comes about quite slowly in horticulture because we operate in free market conditions without any supports. So the political decisions for the next program period doesn't really affect us. We won't benefit from the supports. The owners only invest if they can afford it, but usually they cannot afford it. And innovation is a bit lacking in horticulture because of the lack of funds. This is due to political decisions taken 7, 8 years ago. Thank you. Gaia inspired me. So my question is, how can we use innovation to give flavor back to Estonian tomatoes? So we've lost our tomato flavor because we're trying to compete with the Netherlands in tomato production. Well, thank you. I'm sure that Matti could speak about innovation and science at length, but unfortunately he had to leave. But coming up with new types of tomatoes or carrots is all about R&D and innovation. So the powerful big retail chains are the ones who drive the horticulture sector, because the retail chains want more attractive looking tomatoes that keep for longer. But this does not really contribute to taste. Mr. Nugis. This presentation was so optimistic that I have to ask you, what do you think? Should we keep complaining that young people are leaving, going abroad, and rural areas are empty? Everybody is going to live in the city. So maybe there's no point in whinging. Let's just do something. Thank you for the question. I wouldn't like to give a very specific estimation because I'm not an expert. I do agree with somebody's opinion, whose article I read in the paper in the morning, that the doctors and medicine and some other professions are international, that people in these professions will travel across borders, and they should. The only question is, are they leaving for good or are they coming back? But I don't dare draw conclusions here whether to keep complaining about people leaving the country or not. We need to ask whether people are being forced by to leave by the conditions or it's their free will. Any other comments, questions? I would like to continue on the topic of the youth. For the past year, I worked with rural youth who has been unemployed for a long time. Agree that we don't need to complain and whinge. That's not going to get us anywhere. But we can't close our eyes to the reality. Right now, the media is covering doctors and other specialists leaving. But the average 18-year-olds who don't do very well at school go abroad to do unskilled work. But these are people who could work in Estonia, in the countryside. The problem is they're not rooted in the rural area. They've dropped out of school. Nobody is concerned about them. And if their parents are unemployed as well or have other social problems, then based on my 1 year experience, I would say that we are wasting the resource of Estonian young people. Many of them have good ideas. They could be small entrepreneurs, but they need some kind of a positive push. I, for example, had 40 young people who had been unemployed for a longer period, and 30 of them were employed during the course of the program that we ran. Thank you for this good example. And I hope that you at least gave yourself a pat on the back for helping 30 people gain employment. Thank you for doing a good job. But now we have another comment. I really liked what Eha said. Because of my job, I often think about rural development and what it is. In my mind, in Estonia, one of the problems is the reproduction of the population. If we had more children, then we wouldn't have problems with closing down schools. And secondly, unemployment among the youth and the fact that people are leaving the country and cannot find employment here. I think this has to do with the society's attitude more than anything else. We should value all professions, and if we did, then vocational schools, training welders or agricultural specialists would be more popular. So maybe we need a shift in societal thinking patterns. Everything to do with the internet and e-governance is very popular, but we tend to forget that a programmer's job is relatively routine and boring as well. We should value people who clean the streets, who do maintenance work. And if we in Estonia start to respect these people and start to value all professions at a societal level, then maybe then working and choosing a profession would be easier for young people. Right now everybody is going to Ireland or Finland to wash dishes or do other unskilled work on construction sites. They get a higher pay, but the work isn't very interesting. The key to rural development is people dwelling in rural areas. Somebody has to live there, but the question is, how do we keep people in rural areas? How do we keep them from leaving? That's a question that cannot be answered easily. This has to do with the development of society. So I would say that there's no clear and straightforward answer here. We smoothly transitioned to the topic of everybody leaving to Ireland, Sweden or Finland to pluck turkeys and chicken. So is it innovation for these people? Because in Estonia they had different kinds of jobs or higher level jobs before they decided to go pluck turkeys. So is this innovation that they changed gears and professions? Well, you could put it that way, because these people have thought about the situation that they're in. They've given it a lot of thought. And of course, for many, it's just a desperate step trying to improve their living conditions. But as Raul said, there's no one answer. A student can go to Australia for a year for the adventure and the climate and to work a little bit. This is positive innovation, but those people who go to pluck turkeys in Ireland because they cannot find valued work at home, I don't know whether we can call it negative innovation, whether such a thing exists. I understand that the time you allowed us is running out. Would you like to comment on any other opinions or issues before you go? Well, thank you. I hope you'll be able to discuss more fruitful ideas before the end of the day. It was very good to see you all. Thank you. And now I, unfortunately, because of other tasks, really do have to go now.
Raimond.
Thank you, Raimond. You got the discussion going quite well. And now we have another 20 minutes to continue. So please, the floor is yours. Please share your ideas and thoughts. This topic of innovation and changing the perception of culture in rural areas, it is an intriguing topic. I think the three countries that are represented here today have, of course, different past experiences. While Malta, with their agriculture, is very proprietor-centered, all farmers are also proprietors. It has gone from generation to generation. You know how to plan in a sustainable way. Cooperation is one of the key aspects. Then in Bulgaria, you also had a collective period of cooperation when decisions weren't made on the spot, but somewhere else in a centralized location, where people's decision-making was inhibited. Maybe I understood things wrong, but from what I understand, there were authorities that were listened to, and the little people, so to speak, didn't count for much. However, it seems that the situation has changed now, but the small landowner with their 5-6 hectares here, while we have been supporting larger farms, and we forgot the smaller ones. So in a cultural sense, there was a certain depression among these people who were sitting on all this property, which is richness in and of itself. However, these people didn't know how to be subjects themselves. So the first thing to do would be to get these people back into the circle of decision makers. There are also, of course, these civic initiatives such as Te Me Ara that we talked about, the schools that were saved. The families were invited back to the counties, families with one or two more children. It was an innovative project to save a local school. All these little things that we are doing in the countryside now should be geared towards the people who live in the rural areas now and who don't feel that they are important, that they are subjects. Should be geared towards those people so that they know how to go on and how to use their land effectively. And here I think we have to learn from Malta that doing things together, it's not something that, it's not the same as in social times, socialist times. It's not bowing down to authorities. It's a different type of cooperation, one where every person, each individual has value. And that all contributes to cultural development. So we should think about, when we think about innovative solutions, then we should keep in mind the local person who is sitting there with their 5-6 hectares of land, how to raise their subjectiveness, how to raise their self-awareness. Thank you. I would like to reward that, perhaps apply innovation for local peoples to trigger people's free will that would improve their lives in the countryside. Cooperation and common activities, these are things where people get new initiatives, new ways of valuing themselves. We have forgotten that cooperatives have been very important, even in a historical sense, 100 years ago, so we should come back to them. How to achieve all this, that's a question in and of itself that would be fitting for an entire conference. It would be it would take at least 2 days to discuss that. However, of course, nobody is arguing against your point.
About the parts, the rural, I can't talk about your rural. It was my first opportunity to come here. But I imagine, because if there's anybody who can talk about immigration, it's Malta. In the 1960s, we had approximately one in every 10 person who had to emigrate from Malta due to lack of jobs, one. Secondly, unfortunately, I have to say it, the monopoly of the Roman Catholic Church in Malta. And thirdly, because Malta, in spite of being with the British fighting during the war and all that, we have been left lagging behind. So the youths wanted to look towards something new. And they went to America, to Australia, Canada, England especially, and they made their fortune. I know lots of Maltese people who are millionaires in Australia. One of them is my cousin. I mean, the real thing is here, it was so much restricted that they had to go away. What happened? There was a brain drain. And it happened again lately with the doctors in Malta. We had a brain drain in doctors, but luckily we managed to do something so that those who went away specialized, and now they are returning back as, you know, top surgeons and all that. So I believe that it's identical. Malta was isolated from the world or from Europe before by the British, secluded. I believe your rural areas are the same, and the youths want to either go to the city to get rid of the isolation and start living. I think it's one of the major things. It's not only jobs. To a certain extent, it is jobs, because perhaps it's restricted the number of opportunities in the rural areas, like it was restricted in Malta in the 1960s towards the early 70s. But then in the 70s, we gradually started to improve by getting especially German industry in Malta and all that, which is still there today, 40 years afterwards. I think you mentioned property of the land in Malta. Before, it was one-third belonged to the farmers, one-third to the government, and again, one-third to the Roman Catholic Church. Why? Because people in Malta were scared that they lose their soul and go to hell. So they used to persuade them to leave the fields to the church. I have to say it.
So they can
and
go to heaven.
So that they'll go to heaven, yeah. Fortunately, in the past 20, 25 years, this stopped. The government told the church to give the land back to the government. And in return, the government started to subsidize the church schools, so that even the workers' children could go and study in the church schools. So there's a bit of a balance now. More farmers own their lands. Another thing I have to say, it's difficult to explain agriculture in Malta and in Europe. We call our fields handkerchiefs, because they're that size, they're so small. But one of the main topics that has to be tackled is one of the first things that I said before, exchange, so that we'll keep up opening the Maltese farmer's mentality and help him sort of graduate by knowing what other farmers are doing. That's the first thing. The other thing, we're still pushing to have active cooperatives, because unfortunately after some time, you have to be careful about them, some of them become a little bit passive. When they become passive, the individual farmer may become more egoistic. So if you manage to prevent that, cooperatives will move forward, but I'd rather not continue about cooperatives because I'll take a long time. Thank you.
Thank you for that interesting bit of information. You have the floor to continue the discussion. Well, I'm in a situation where nobody seems to want to take the floor. Well, I'm not going to force anyone, that's for sure. What we can do is we can look at the clock and say that we have another 5 to 10 minutes. So perhaps what we'll do is I will try to draw things to a conclusion by summarizing a little bit what we talked about here today. What were the ideas that really stuck out? What were the possibilities that we talked about? And at the end, and of course, I will also give you the opportunity to correct me if I understood anything incorrectly. Our main topic today was innovation and the possibilities for innovation in agriculture and rural life development. And I'm fairly confident that this is the main topic that we talked about today. We also touched upon some ideas on what are the means. That could be used in CAP, which is currently being formed right now, which could be used to help rural areas and agriculture. There were a few activities that rose to the surface where innovative solutions would be possible. One of the ideas that was talked about was cooperation as a new innovative solution. I couldn't say that it would be an entirely innovative. However, in Estonia, we can say that there isn't enough of it. And we do realize that common activities, cooperation is something that needs improvement. And this does have political will behind it as well. And we can admit today that we don't have enough common activities. So this, in the future, should gain much more political attention in terms of measures as well. We talked about training, about education. And with a view on to the future, we need more educated young people in agriculture. And on the other hand, and at the same time, we did admit that an educated person is more open to innovation than a person who is less educated and more afraid of innovation. We talked about how producers, consumers, and scientists in collaboration could bring to life clusters. And these clusters would help trigger innovation, and that would have positive effects. We also talked about triggering the free energy of people by including them more. This would be innovation in management, innovation in mentalities and attitudes. We also talked about short market chains, supply chains, and innovation. And again, innovation would be the tool for developing the topic of local food, for example. And this would in turn help improve the nutrition of our citizens. We talked about different target groups towards whom the future agricultural policy should pay more attention. We talked about whether these should be small or medium landowners. However, we came to the conclusion that everything needs to be in balance. And it's this balance in particular that also creates harmony in rural life and enriches it. Now, when we try to analyze a little bit of what we try to do, develop, promote, if we think about what are the instruments, the mechanisms in the CAP that could help develop these processes, what they are in all of our different member states. We know that we have two pillars. We have the first pillar, direct supports, direct payments. And then we have the second pillar that deals with the questions of rural development. And if we think about the nature of the first pillar supports, then right now there is a lot of open debate about how the first pillar should be greener, towards whom it is geared, how much of it should be spent on the youth, how much of it should be spent on small landowners. So these are all debates that are currently still undergoing. However, actually, anyone can apply for the first pillar supports, anyone who complies with cross-compliance requirements. But I would like to figuratively say that the first pillar supports are like a high-speed train that has been put on a track, and it is heading down a very determined track, and it's not really going to influence innovation that much. Of course, everyone can use the funds in an innovative way. However, there are no officials or politicians who have the role of directing innovation in this pillar. So when we talk about innovative solutions and everything else we discussed here today, then we see that the opportunities for realizing these are more in the second pillar, in the rural development pillar of the CAP. And we know more or less what the possible measures are that the second pillar offers. The list is, of course, not definitive, because the whole package has not been approved yet. And we don't know what kind of changes there will be from the debate between the Parliament and the Council, what will be the final rural development policy. But I think that the general frames are rather clear, and there shouldn't be very big changes in it. And when it comes to innovation, and in the second pillar, for scientists, producers, and their cooperation, there are special chapters when it comes to product design, for example, product development. also when we talked about cooperatives, and this is something that goes under the second pillar. And if we wanted to summarize and synthesize a little bit, we could conclude that the CAP second pillar has a very important role. And if we try to generalize it to the European Union level, where about 20% of the CAP fund is in the second pillar, and while we know that it has been 50-50 between the pillars, and we have been rather happy with that, then after today's debate, we could conclude that perhaps we would like to see more funding in the second pillar than the first one. First of all, it gives much more opportunities to the producers and to influence the processes. Was I thorough enough in my overview of today, or is there something that you would like to add to it? The microphone is yours again.
I think you were quite thorough, but maybe I wasn't paying attention carefully enough, so I would like to outline the leader issue once more. Leader is a measure that involves not only farmers, but also people who live in rural areas more generally. It seems to me that at the moment the leader projects and strategies have often been compiled without actually taking into account the needs of the farmers. If my secret information is true, then the same problem is also in Bulgaria. So I think one of the key words today is that leader needs more representation by farmers to be efficient. I think it's very important when we speak about innovation, rural development. So farmers need to be well represented. So the salt of the earth needs to speak up. You cannot bypass these people. And I think leader is a place where you could involve more people. And I think farmers' representative organizations should be involved in leader groups. And maybe the Bulgarians can say whether it is a problem there as well or not. I sort of have the feeling that they had some problems with that issue as well. A good point. Leader itself is innovative. A management and planning mechanism. So leader again is a second pillar measure, so it takes us back to the second pillar again. But would the Bulgarian colleagues like to support this idea or add something or comment? We see some nodding heads here, so a microphone. In Estonian, nodding means consent and support. Is there anything else anybody would like to add? I'm not Bulgarian, but I would like to comment on what Jaak said. Leader in itself is not really a measure, but an approach, a method. And the measure is only a part of it. And leader is also open. One of its main components is openness, that you can always join leader, NGOs, companies. So I do support this proposal that farmers should be more involved in leader actions, but farmers already have the right to go to their local leader group and say that I want to become a member. So we need to call on the farmers to be more active. And I would like to conclude this. Yes?
Well, I will join my colleagues as far as the initiative of farmers is related. And we'll make the link about the cooperatives. We started the discussion on cooperatives even last night, and during the lunch we discussed with our colleague. The problem in Bulgaria is, as it was already discussed, we have some difficulties in farmer joining together to make efforts. And this is why it's difficult in Bulgaria to make producer organization or some kind of cooperation for joint actions, and we have some historical reasons for that. And leader, the good thing about leader is that if when it starts, and it's starting in Bulgaria also, when it starts, it's it can work on local program local problems, and it joins people that live at the same place, work in different different spheres in agricultural local areas, and hopefully living together and working together and not being competitive, they can achieve something for, they can trust better each other and achieve something for local areas. So it's starting in Bulgaria, and since this program will continue in the next program period, I believe that it has the potential to develop also. Thank you.
Okay, it seems to me that we are in agreement. In conclusion, I would like to thank the organizers of this event for wonderful organization. I would like to thank all of the presenters for their contribution to our discussion. Their contribution was priceless. I would like to thank all the participants, those who took the floor, and also those who remained active listeners, taking away lessons. I would also like to thank the interpreters and the interpreters kindly thank the speaker. Without the interpreters, we would have had a boring day. Though you might have learned more Estonian by the end of the day. So we had an interesting discussion. I hope that all of you learned something from it, and that we can apply what we learned in the future.